Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Gaslight, located here in St. Louis, Missouri. If you haven't been by yet, it's a beautiful recording studio attached to a bar. You can hang out as a fan and watch one of your favorite bands in the studio recording and have a cold drink, enjoy some tacos, and have a great time. Or if you have a band and you want to record, it's a great atmosphere to get in there and record a great record. You can come out there. They have a lot of fun events coming up on June 2nd. Dracula recording session going on. June 4th, Sunday, it's Gaslight Sessions with Slush Wave and Modern Gold. And on June 9th, Elliot Pearson over there recording his record. So a lot of fun things happening. Get involved. Follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Find everything at GaslightSTL.com.
The podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hey, this is Jeremy Essick, and you're listening to my friend Shane Presley on Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
I did a show. It was last year. It was a club. It wasn't this club, but it was like this, where you walked by a bar, and I was sitting at the bar, and a woman ordered a Busch beer, and then the bartender goes, "We don't have Busch beer," and then this woman lost her goddamn mind. I've never seen anyone go so crazy over something so minuscule. Like, I've honestly seen children deal with the concept of death better. She goes, "What? No!" Well, everywhere I go has Busch beer. It's like, "Well, lady, I'm sorry you came to the comedy venue instead of One-Eyed Ricky's cockfights or wherever you normally spend your entertainment dollar. Here's the secret. They had other beers. They'll do the same job. Okay, if you like Busch beer, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're drinking Busch beer, you're drinking it to get drunk. There's no such thing as a Busch beer connoisseur. Like, no one puts Busch beer in a, like, fluted glass and swirls it around. Oh, the way the hops interact with the delicious Missouri water. Like, no one does that. This woman lost her mind, and then she came to the comedy venue, and she sat pretty much where these nice people are sitting. And instead of smiling at me as they're doing, she passed out. I know, and most people would be content to let sleeping dogs lie, but the problem with me is I cannot not poke the bear. So I'm standing in the back as this is happening, and there was about an hour of show before I went on, and so I said to a friend of mine, I go, "Hey, here's $20, go to the gas station and get me some Busch beer." Well, some of you think you know where this is going, but the brilliance is in the execution, okay? I didn't just drink the beer, that would have been amateur hour. I had a waitress bring it to me while I was on stage. Well, thank you. But most of that respect should actually go towards the waitress, because she didn't just slide it to me. She made a show. Like, she brought it to stage like Simba had just been born in the Lion King. So she hands me this beer, and I take a huge drink, and I put it label facing right at this woman, and she doesn't wake up. But her friend notices it, and her friend elbows her, and she goes, "Do you see that?" And the woman, like, came out of her blackout and, like, realized she wasn't where she normally is when that happens. Like, "Guess I'm not in bed or driving." Like, And what was awesome was I knew the moment she knew what was happening. Because, like, if you've ever woken up someone when they're drunk and they shouldn't be awake yet, you know, so, like, their eyes aren't ready to be eyes immediately. So they started all, like, Cookie Monster style. They're all just like, "Rrr!" And then they just slowed, and then they narrowed, and then she just looks right at the beer, and then in perfect English looks at the lady next to her and goes, "Yeah, I seen it." And then proceeded to eyeball fuck me for the rest of the show. And for the first time in my life, I enjoyed a Busch beer.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today with Jeremy Essig.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, man, this it's kind of been a minute. You were on a little while ago with the band, with yep. Shark Dad. We talked about all the things Shark Dad's up to.
Yeah.
But as a comic, we were talking just a moment ago. It's been since like 2015 you've been on.
Yeah, it's 2+ years.
Yeah.
So I think some things have happened.
For sure.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, right. But I'm excited, man. It's like you're always one of my favorites to talk to and hang out with. And, you know, I love seeing you perform on stage, whether... I don't think I've seen you perform on stage with the band yet, so I'll have to, that'll be coming up this weekend, but...
Yeah.
But as far as a comic, I mean, we've known each other for a long time now.
Yeah, since way before the podcast.
Yeah. And I think that in that episode, we kind of talked about that you even did a little podcasting for a while and stuff.
Yeah, I did. I had a podcast called Trivial Matters that I did for about a year, I want to say. And then I just got real busy, and then especially like when I moved to New York, it became too hard to kind of try to, I mean, you know yourself, like
sure.
to not just record the interview, but then edit it and like try to promote it. It just became like, it's like anything else. Like, I feel like sometimes you get into these projects and they start really fun, and then it becomes like the last thing you want to do. And what I've learned as I go from project to project is like, when it feels that way, you should probably be done, you know, because then you're just spitting out. I felt like at the end of that podcast, I was just spitting out dreck, or I was like putting out half episodes or like missing deadlines. And so, I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Sure.
But that was also, I think I started doing that. I've been essentially on tour since 2004, really. But there was a period from, I guess it was October of 2012 till July of 2015, where I didn't have a week off. So I was just like, unless I was performing in the city I was living in, I was out of town every single week. And at a point, you're just like, I don't know when I'm going to edit this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I just need a nap.
Right.
So, but that was fun.
For sure, man. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I have a lot of fun getting out and talking to all these people all around town and meeting all kinds of new people and stuff. And so for me, it's a great excuse for networking and kind of meeting people all around my neighborhood, you know?
You're also way more friendly than I am. There's that.
But it is a ton of work, though, especially as a one-person operation, like to record and edit and, you know, produce and be the webmaster and every, you know, all the different stuff. So, I don't know. I have a great time doing it.
And you do a great job with it.
But, I think it's kind of hard to believe, though. I've already been doing this 3 years now, so it's like...
Yeah, stuff just passes, man. Like, you kind of get into something, and, because you were talking about the episode we did with the band, and it's like, I was thinking about that, like, that was probably one of, within the first 2 months of, like, after I joined the band, and it's so weird to think, like, even, like, the songs we were writing at that point versus the songs that are coming out on the EP that, you know, that comes out this Friday versus... Like, even the songs I've written since we recorded the EP, it's weird when you get into a project, you don't, like... When you're enjoying it, time just kind of... You're like, oh, I didn't realize that was, you know, like, to think back... It's crazy to me, like, how long I've been doing stand-up now. Like, it's something that was, like, a total, like, lark. Like, thing that I just did to fill space in my life at a point to go, like, oh, that became my career, and I've been doing it for, you know... I get, like, 12, 13 years now. Like, it's, like... Probably more. I don't even know. Like, it's just so weird when, the passage of time when you're enjoying something versus kind of what we were talking about, the passage of time when you're bored with something. And it's just like, oh, do I have to do this another month?
Yeah. Well, we said the EP. You do have a brand new EP, Shark Dad record EP coming out this Saturday. Is the release party? I guess it hits the internet on Friday.
Yeah, it'll be. It's on our Bandcamp and iTunes and Spotify and all those wonderful things. That'll be up on Friday. It's called Almost Pink is the name of it. It was we did most of it at Gaslight Studios here in St. Louis, and it got its name from we had written a new song right before it called Pink Hotel, and we only had a certain amount of time to record, and we couldn't, we almost had it, but we didn't have it, so we just thought it was funny to call it Almost Pink, because we almost got Pink Hotel on there, and we didn't.
Yeah.
So it's, it's five tracks total, four completely new tracks, and then the Jesus Christ, which is the song that was on the 7-inch that came out with my comedy album earlier this year, we did a newer version of that. We redid the vocals, and I just mixed it a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. So.
And so, if you're in the St. Louis area, come out to the Heavy Anchor on Saturday, June 3rd, and you can see Jeremy with Shark Dad and guest Old Caledonia and Super Slag.
Yeah.
So, be rocking a good time over there for the release party.
Yeah, it should be. It's I'm really looking forward to it. It's it's a very different, you know, because I was in bands when I was in like high school and college, and then I stopped doing it when I started doing stand up, and it's to do both now. It's weird how different, you know, what a different, like, I feel, at least for me, like, stand up, like, I'm kind of measured before I go on, you know, because I'm trying to think through, like, what do I want to talk about, and, you know, you kind of want to be somewhat present and sober, you know, so you can kind of deal with, kind of, you know, feel the crowd flow, whereas, like, music, it just, to me, still at this point, it just feels like, yeah, let's just be loud.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is going to be fun.
Sure.
So, not that stand-up isn't fun, but it's just very different. So, yeah, that should be a really good show.
I think it's interesting now that, like, you got shows like Comedy Jam on Comedy Central and stuff. Like, this whole, like, comedians being rock stars kind of thing. And, like, and then, like, and you're actually, like, living it, man. You're out there doing it, so.
It's, you know, it's. I think as you get older, and I'm not super old, I don't know, maybe I am, I guess it depends on the perspective of the person listening to this, but I'm in my late 30s, and the one thing I've learned as I've gotten older is you stop limiting yourself, you know what I mean? You stop going, well, I'm only going to do this, or I'm going to do that, and it does, to me, lead to a complete lack of sleep. Like, I don't sleep very often anymore, but, like, it's been great to go, like, yeah, why not? Why wouldn't I do that? You know, I think the game show Loser that we did, that was a big help for me in that way of go, because it was just such a dumb idea. You know, it was just such a, like, crazy idea that I came up with, you know, sleep-deprived on a plane a day after meeting Chris Ward and being like, I like that dude. We should do a game. Like, it was just so dumb. And then to do it for 3 years, and it was really, like, oh, I can do weird stuff. You know what I mean? You don't have to, like, put yourself in this one box and say, like, I'm going to, you know, creativity or writing or whatever you want to call it, I think is better when you actually let it come out in whatever way you want to let it come out. I mean, I you know, we may have talked about this on the Shark Dad podcast, but, you know, I was going through two pretty rough breakups after, like, 2012. And I really tried to channel a lot of that into stand-up, and I don't know that all of it translated, you know what I mean? I think there's a point where you can make, I don't know, maybe some people could do it better than me, but I'm sure a lot of people could do it better than me, but I was trying to channel emotions into jokes, and it didn't always work, you know what I mean? People, at a point, people were like, yeah, that's awesome, like, you're making us really sad,
yeah,
like, at this stand-up show where we didn't want to be really sad, and it's been great to, you know, to start writing songs again, which is, I mean, Jesus Christ, which is the song on the 7-inch and one of the songs on the EP, that was the first set of lyrics I wrote since I was, like, 22. So, and as I continue to do that, or just continue to write music, it's been like, oh, okay, so there are other creative outlets for different feelings. And so that's, I mean...
Yeah.
The one thing, you know, I think it's funny to me sometimes because, you know, my favorite thing has been, or if it's, I don't know if it's favorite, but it's been funny. I get this a lot, like, people will come to the band shows, and definitely people who, like, saw Loser, which was, like, real loose, and I was sometimes intentionally not playing the guitar very well, like, you know, and it's, I've had multiple people go, like, oh, I didn't actually think you know how to play guitar. Like, it was like, yeah, I was doing a dumbass game show. Like, yeah. You know, and it was more of a comedy thing. So that, I mean, I guess that's a compliment.
Right.
But, you know, that's been kind of fun, too, to go, like, oh, okay, yeah, I do. Like, I've been, you know, I started my first band when I was 16 and I played bass. And then I learned how to play guitar by basically learning every REM song. Like all those old, like, you know, the early albums, the real, like, jangly open chords. And so, like you've probably talked to enough musicians. Most musicians learn power chords first. You know, it's the thing punk's based off of. Right. You learn one form and you just move it down the neck. I didn't learn power chords. I learned all these weird open chords, and because that's what they use in a lot of REM songs. That's how I learned to play. So, like, I remember when I was in college, I tried to join this, like, kind of, like, punkier band, and I couldn't play power chords. Like, I didn't. My fingers didn't know. Then they were like, what are you doing? Like, how do you not know that? And I was like, I don't know, man. I know it. And you'd play, like, this weird, like, open, sweeping G chord, and they'd be like, that's not what we're looking for. And I was like, you know, and you've also, my first guitar, you couldn't play an F on it. It had too much of a buzz. So I think that probably contributed to it, too. But, it's weird when you, like, learn things. Because that's what, I think, through Loser, we did 99 different cover songs over the 3 years of the show. And, you know, I mean, you saw it, and you were on it, and, like, a couple times. And, like, we did everything from, like, country music to, like, metal to, like, funk. Like, we had all these different themes. And so if you learn 99 covers of, like, very different genre of music, like, eventually you're just going to get better. You know what I mean? Like, even if you're doing it kind of as a joke, like, you can't help but kind of go, like, oh, I know how to do that now. I didn't know I knew how to do that. So.
I was thinking of the comedy, you know, you're saying you're bringing, trying to bring those jokes into, and it was just being sad. Like, I recently saw Christopher Titus. Probably a year ago now or something, but I saw him, man, like, and he's like one of those, like, guys that, like, I think it's kind of rare that, because he talks a lot about his personal life and, you know, going through divorce and the kids and all this stuff, and, like, and there's parts of the show is, like, you know, like, you're laughing hysterically and crying from that, but then all of a sudden, like, then your emotions change and he brings it down, and it's more like a one-man show.
Yeah.
Like, than a real, like, true stand-up comedy, but it's like, so it's a rare thing to be able to pull all that together and make a proper show out of it.
Yeah, and I think the comedy album that came out in February, you know, there's some stuff on there that's still remnants of that, and I think with some of it I did an okay job, and but there were just some feelings, emotions, whatever, that I, like I'm saying, as a writer, I couldn't get across in that medium.
Yeah.
And it's also the weird thing, too, like, when you lose, I feel like, and I mean, my whole stand-up act now, it's, you know, back in, like, whatever, 08, 09, it was, like, super political, and now it's super, it's very personal, you know, it's just stories from my life, but, like, when you're dealing with, like, for lack of a better term, dark emotions, you know, sadness or regret or whatever, depression, when the fog of that lifts a little bit and you have jokes about it, I think it's sometimes hard to sell them anymore. You know what I mean? Because, like, at least for me, there'd be times I'd be talking about something that when I wrote it was, like, really important and it really, like, affected me, and I, you know, I could talk about it with conviction, and whatever that thing you're sad about, what you kind of figure out, you know, it becomes more of a scab or a scar than, like, the open wound that it was when you wrote it. It was always hard for me to, like, get that emotion back. Like, I'd be standing on stage and I'd be like, well, you're supposed to be talking about this, but it doesn't really bother you. And then to me, I just felt like a fraud. Like, I'd be like, well, they're laughing, but, like, I don't really, I'm not emotionally invested in that. It's like, like, one of the things I really hate is if you see guys, like, doing, and I'm not, like, trying to critique stand-up, but, like, if you see guys, like, they get really angry about something, and they get really angry about it, like, every, like, and it's something, like, mundane, you know what I mean? Like, they fucking forgot a taco, or, you know, just something, like, and you're like, well, maybe if you're on your way to the show, and you were hungry, like, maybe that emotion's relevant, but, like, when you see someone do a bit like that, like, 30, 40 times, you're like, sure, man, I know you're not mad about that. Like, you're not that, you're not, like, hit the stool mad about it, you know what I mean? It's, and I'm not talking about, like, like, you think of someone like Bill Burr, who has a lot of, like, angst and, like, anger in his act, but it's feels at least genuine, you know what I mean? Because he's not angry at, like, something trivial, or, you know what I mean? And that's more of his personality. But, like, if you watch a guy do, like, a set where he's like, and my kids did this, blah, 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 and, you know, it's all this, like, whatever, and it's all happy fun, but then there's one bit, you know, you can only sell it with anger. It's like, to me, it's like the same way of, like, and I'm not clean, like, on stage in any way, shape, or form. I'm not filthy, but I swear, you know. But, like, it's the same thing as, like, when you see a guy do a bit where it's just, like, there's, like, 400 swear words in the bit, and you're like, man, you could do that with it. Like, but you couldn't. That's the problem. I guess that's what I'm getting at. It's the same when you see people using fake anger. It's like, you know that bit won't work if you're not ridiculously angry. You know that bit won't work if you didn't say fuck for it. I mean, there's a, you know, I'm not trying to get too into the technical side of stand-up, but there's, like, this is something I've talked about with a lot of my friends. It's like, when you have a new bit and you don't quite know where it goes, like, you kind of know, like, well, this is kind of what I want to say, and this is kind of what I'm trying to talk about, but the wording, and so it's like a bit, a longer bit can fall under the weight of itself. You know what I mean? It's like, well, this part's funny and this part's funny, but you got all this middle stuff that's, like, not... If you say fuck a lot in the middle, you can get through it. And, like, that's why you watch, like I think sometimes people who are, like, even, like, really super talented people, if you see them, like, workshopping something, or, like, there's a ton of fucks in there because they're like, I don't exactly know how to get from here to here. And so, I feel that way with, like, emotion on stage. You know what I mean? It's like, It should be somewhat honest. You know, I mean, that's to take it back to the music, I feel like, I mean, I jump around a lot on stage, which when I do music, which is probably hilarious to anybody who's seen me do stand-up, because I really just stand there half the time. I just look completely lazy. But it's like, I feel that in music, like, it's like I want to jump up and down. You know, I mean, when I listen to, like, I mean, there'll be times I'm in my apartment and I'm just, like, jumping around. Like, you know that, like, feeling when you hear a new song and you're like, this is incredible, yeah, and you start, like, jumping up and down. Or I don't know if other people do it. I do it, you know? And it's like, that's how I feel with music, and that's where I think, you know, it differs. But I think with anything, with any kind of performance, it's like, you can fake emotion, but people know, you know, and to me, I just don't like feeling like a fraud. It's like, well, if this doesn't mean anything to me, why am I telling you about it? You know what I mean? You paid money to come see this, and if I'm just up here like, I'm sad about that thing, are you really? Nah, I'm kind of over it. You know, like, it's like, I feel like when I was going through my divorce, it was like, it reached a point where you're still like, I'm sad about my divorce. And then you're like, you get off stage and you're like, yeah, but I have a girlfriend and we're pretty happy. So was I real? You know, sure. Like, at a point you can't channel whatever. Yeah. I'm way over explaining something that was probably evident like 5 seconds into what I was saying.
you said, talking about the cursing in comedy, and I thought of, a while back, I was listening to Nerdist, and they had Brian Regan on,
mm-hmm,
and it, like, famously works clean for everything, and they were kind of talking about that, and, like, you know, just, and, like, he was basically saying how, like, there's so many other words to say that a similar, get the message across.
Sure.
You don't have to use the curse words, but part of the fun of being on the podcast, they got him to do some of his, like, famous bits, like, and drop in a bunch of curse words in them, and, like...
It's funny.
And I laughed so hard, like, the whole Pop-Tart thing, and he was, like, just throwing, like, saying fuck and motherfucker or whatever and all the stuff in that. So
that's,
I laughed...
That's very funny.
I laughed so hard because I never heard Brian say that stuff, so that's what maybe... But...
Yeah, he's not wrong. Yeah. I mean, he's... And I'm saying that as someone... I mean, I would hope no one would listen to this and then come see me do stand-up and be shocked that I swore, because yeah, I do. But to me, it's like... He's completely right, by the way. But I swear when I talk, I know I already have, I try not to do it in interviews, I know I already have once on this podcast, and I apologize for that, but I mean, I do it when I talk, so it's everything else I'm talking about. You want to be authentic, yeah, and so it's like, and that's, like, if you overuse it, I think that's not really how you talk, you know what I mean? But if you don't use it, I also feel inauthentic, you know, I mean, I did a show, I feel really bad about this, but I don't feel like it was 100% my fault. I did a show, I'm not going to say where, I'm not going to get into the hole because it'll be too easy to suss out, but it was this big theater, and I was opening for this dude, and I was talking to him backstage, and I was talking to the production people, and, like, everybody was cool, no one, you know, when you do, sometimes you'll do shows, and they'll be like, hey, if you're going to do this show, you have to do X, Y, and Z, and I feel like there's nothing wrong with that. But then it's up to you as the performer to go, yes, I'm willing to accept those terms, or no, thank you, I'd rather not do, you know, and that, I don't think there's anything wrong with any of that. You know, if you're designing a show for a thing and you're bringing out a certain crowd, then you should have an appropriate performer. It's not like, I'll go side note and then I'll come back to my initial story, but I remember one time at another club, it was supposed to be an all-black show. That was the idea of the show. It was, you know, they'll call it urban or whatever. That's the bullshit comedy word for you know, an African American show. And at the last minute, the headliner dropped out. And so myself and my friend Andy Smith got contacted, and they were like, hey, would you two want to do the show? And we were both off and could use the money, and we were like, yeah, we're going to do the show. Well, they didn't tell the crowd. So, like, it's a room, you know, packed, like 350 people. And then my and Andy's white asses walk up on stage, and the crowd was pissed, and they were right. Like, they were super right to be upset, you know what I mean? It wasn't... So I think... It's fine if you build a show in a certain way to a certain crowd, be it clean or, you know, all Latino comics or whatever. That's totally fine. But then you have to also let the performers know. So to get back to the story I was telling, which is about swearing, and I do that a lot. I go off topic. So I'm hanging out backstage as I'm walking on stage. Like, they had said my name on the off stage, and I'm walking out the door or the side of the stage. They go, hey, by the way, there's kids in the crowd. Don't curse. And I was like, wait, what? Because, no, I'm sorry, I have allergies, by the way. Put that coughing in, it's too obnoxious. I'm trying to soften my throat with whiskey. And they said, and I'm walking out, and they said, don't, and I'm like, wait, what? Because, you know, you had already planned kind of the bits you were going to do, sure. And the thing is, it's like, when someone says, don't curse, it's the same way of, like, saying, like, don't think about the number 10. Like, what's the first that you think about, right. You know? So I'm on stage, I'm trying to be hyper-conscious about it. But I know I swore twice. And the reason they said don't swear was there were children in the audience. But no one told me there were going to be children in the audience. Like, that was never brought up.
Right.
So I get off stage, and apparently, like, two parents, like, grabbed their kids and, like, marched out. What was the... I think someone called it despicable. And, again, those parents weren't necessarily wrong. Like, I think if I had a child... When I brought them to a certain performance, I wouldn't necessarily... Well, I don't know that I'd care, but if that's something you care about... I could see, like, the parents aren't wrong, but in my mind, it was like, well, neither was I. Like, yeah. no one told me this, and so it's kind of like, there's space for everything. But, to be honest, if they had told me ahead of time, there's going to be children in the crowd, I would have turned down the gig. I would have just been like, it's not just the swearing, it's like, I feel like what I do, especially in stand-up, it's like, there's more adult themes, and that's not to say I'm talking about sex or anything, but like, some child, like, just to go back to the divorce, I don't know why I keep perseverating on that, but it's like, definitely at that time I was on stage, it's like, some kid's not going to understand, like, 15 minutes on, like, my feelings about relationships post my, like, no kid's going to understand that or care. And it's just, and I recognize that, because I think when you start doing stand-up, I think probably bands do this too. I've been lucky to kind of have that background coming into this band, and, you know, like, some of the other guys have been in other bands, so they kind of know, but it's like, when you really want to perform, be it stand-up, be it music, be it, I don't know what else, juggling, I don't know what else people do, but you want to be on stage so bad that you make the mistake of going, like, this seems like a horrible crowd for what I do, but I'm going to do it.
Right.
And then, of course, it goes terribly, and of course everyone knows it went really bad, and you just feel like crap. And so, I mean, not that necessarily, but, like, I mean, it'd be the same for, like, a... You know, like some young, like, you know, hardcore band to be like, well, yeah, I know it's an all-country music show, but my uncle knows the booker, so we'll get on it. And then to think it's going to somehow, of course that's going to go terrible. And I, you know, it's like, I don't know, I got to a point where I really feel like, why antagonize a crowd? Like, what is the benefit in that? You know, like, everyone just kind of, like, I know there's guys and there's whatever, there's that, like, attitude, it's worse in stand-up than it is in music, I believe, but it does exist in music, there's, like, that attitude of, like, for lack of a better term, badassery, you know, where it's like, yeah, I fucking showed them, and it's like, why did you have to? Like, is your life so, like, and I'm not saying, like, there's a point, I think, especially if you're doing, like, something, like, social commentary, something like that, where you do something, I feel it does serve a message to go, like, you know, I informed them about a thing maybe they didn't want to hear about, but, you know, that's different to me than going, like, said fuck a lot to a bunch of kids. Yeah. Aren't I a badass? No, you're a fucking idiot, dude. What's wrong with you? You know? And I think is that's just the thing, man. The longer I do stuff, it's just like, I'm not saying that it has to be my crowd or I even have a crowd, for lack of a better term, but it's like, why would you intentionally go into something you know is going to go horribly and do it anyways? You know, just to, so you can tell your friends, see, you see what I, you know, like I said, I think you see it sometimes with young comics, and the reason is, for lack of a better term, the people that do that, I think it's because they're not very good. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because to get someone to laugh, or in the case of music, to get someone to dance or whatever, you know, whatever the medium you want reaction to be in, is hard. It's challenging, and you have to work a lot. But to offend someone is super easy. You know what I mean? I mean, you're a friend of mine, and you're a super nice guy, but if I wanted to sit here and just offend you, I could.
Right.
You know what I mean? We could end this podcast in 30 minutes with you throwing me through a window. It wouldn't be that hard. You know what I mean? So I feel like when people do that, when they go into, like, mediums, they know it's going to be bad. It's because they're unsure they can get the reaction they want, so they get the reaction they know, because they're at least getting a reaction, as opposed to just a crowd sitting there going, like,
sure.
You know?
Hey, looking for some new music? Come by Music Record Shop right here in St. Louis, Missouri, located in the Dot Zec building. New records every Friday, including this week, All Time Low, Benjamin Booker, Tom Petty, Iggy Pop reissues, The Bleachers, Dan Auerbach, and all kinds of stuff. So, a lot of cool things happening over there at Music Record Shop. Get involved. Follow them all on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. They're always giving away like tickets and records and things and sales and all kinds of stuff. So get involved, follow them there, and shop online 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com. Also, if you have some local music you'd like to get on the shelves there, reach out and see how you can make that happen. Again, everything musicrecordshop.com.
I once got to see Steve Byrne at college, like, homecoming kind of thing, you know, family weekend deal. So, like, all the little brothers and sisters, mom and dad, mm-hmm. they were all up there. And the first part of the show was Derek Hughes, magician, comedian.
Yeah.
So it was more of a family-friendly.
Well, I'll take care of it. I'll see you. I got you.
More of the family-friendly part of the show. And then they came on, representative of the college was like, yeah, it's, you know, if you're here for, if you're going to stick around, the next part of the show is going to be dirty. You know, if you're underage, you probably ought to leave or whatever. They warned everybody, and Steve comes out, and there's still, like, 8-year-olds in the front row, and he was trying real hard to be clean for a while, and then eventually he's like, you know what, forget it, like, this is who I am, this is my comedy, and they've warned everybody, so he told some dirty jokes, and, like, literally, like, half the crowd got up and walked out the door, and, like, and I laughed, that was, like, I laughed so hard at that, like, it was just so funny watching, like, you know, but they, you know, they were, I felt like they were being rude by not, you know, obliging
yeah,
to what the...
Yeah, I feel like anything in the scenario you just described, there's nothing wrong except for the fact... Like, even the people that got up and left, like, maybe, yeah. like, even if you go, like, how bad could it be? But, again, and I've worked with Steve.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I know his act backwards and forwards. I certainly don't know what he was doing at that time.
Right.
You know, but there's really, I can't think of anything in his act that's so, like, appalling that a child would hear. And they, you know, with the exception of, like, curse words. And that's, when someone warns you, like, hey, it's going to get more adult, that's what that means, dum-dum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what that means. He's not going to come out... And, like, when someone says it's going to be more adult, they don't mean, like, oh, well, he's going to be spouting economic theory.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, no, that's what it... So, but I really do... And, again, I'm someone without children.
Right.
And I really feel not all of my friends, not really any of my friends, but you see it sometimes with people with children, that there's this, like, weird assumption that, like... Because I have had a child, the world needs to bend to my whim, and I don't have to alter anything I'm doing. You know what I mean? It's that. It's like that theory of like. Like I remember one time, I was getting a bagel. I was in Indianapolis, and I was just at this bagel place, like having a coffee and eating a bagel. And this woman just came up to me, and I probably would have done it if she had approached it differently. I was myself and the girl I was dating at the time. We were eating this place. This woman goes, you're going to need to get up. And I go, excuse me? And she goes, you're going to need to get up. I have a child. We need your seat. Hey, fuck you. Like, this isn't Chuck E. Cheese. Like, I'm just having a bagel and a coffee and a, like, again, if she had come up and been like, hey, do you guys mind, like, you know, I've had the kid out all day and we're real tired. I would have been like, yeah, right, like, it's still obnoxious, but it's the, but there is that theory, I think, and again, it's not all parents, but there's that theory of, like, I have had a child, you need to bend my whim, and no, I do not. Like, I don't wish ill on your child, and I don't wish ill on you, and I don't even necessarily dislike your child, I'm sure, whatever. It's usually adults I dislike, you know, it's, but that idea, that same thing with what you're talking about, Steve, and I've seen versions of that. I've had versions of that happen. Right. You know, I did a show at Helium here in town back probably in, like, March. I think it was, like, February, March. My memory's shit, but... and this guy had his, like, 10 or 12-year-old kid. It was the MC's friend, who now I know he became a friend of mine, but he's like, hey, my friend's out there with his kid, and I go, I don't care. I go, I do not care. And, but I went out, and I, you know, was, of course, standing in front, and, you know, you break that fourth wall, and I just said, hey, man, just a heads up, there is going to be cursing. I'm not very gratuitous, like, sexually about anything, but there's going to be other adult concepts. I'm giving you this heads up now because I don't want to feel bad that your kid's here. And he's like, nope, he's fine. Yeah. And he really was. And the kid almost seemed like... The kid seemed to enjoy it, and the dad didn't seem to have a problem with it. I talked to him afterwards. He's like, oh, no, I bring him out all the time. You're like, cool. If that's the way you want to raise your kid, that's probably more like how I would raise my kid. You know, I still remember I had to review Ike Riley at Off-Broadway. This is like a year, 2 years ago, whatever. And there was this little kid in the front, like six, right? And he had these, like, giant, like, the headphones that they wear when they're, like, conducting airplanes isn't a phrase, but you know what I mean. You don't conduct airplanes, but everybody knows what I mean. And I just thought that was so awesome. Like, I didn't even realize that Off-Broadway was all ages, and I was like, that, like, because you think all ages, and you think, like, for me at least, I always thought, like, 17-year-old, 18-year-old kids going to a punk show, you know? But you don't think, like, yeah, this cool dad is going to bring his son, like, and I mean, again, music's a bit different than comedy, unless, you know, like, I don't know if you're going to, like, well, I don't know. I'm sure there's some people that take 8-year-olds to see the ICP. I mean, it's generally the same. Oh, it's, I mean, the same level of maturity, basically. But it was so cool, and, like, Ike Riley, like, really took to this kid being there and, like, handed him a guitar at one point. It was, and I was like, that's awesome. You know what I mean? And if your kid's really into stand up and you're okay with him hearing things, or you research the, you know, say if you took 5 minutes to look up what I do on YouTube or whatever, you would go, like, okay, this guy does swear, but he doesn't really, you know, it's not super graphic. He doesn't talk about, like, bathroom things, for lack of a better, you know, it's not scatological is the better, more adult term for that. Then cool, then bring him. But I think adults make that same mistake. Sure. You know what I mean? I think adults come to shows and then they're like, oh, this is not what I wanted to see. And it's like, well, the internet exists, moron. Like, it takes 2 seconds to read, that's that guy's name. You know, to go back to that show I was talking about that I did with Andy, it's like, I felt bad for that crowd. Like, they were angry, and I thought they were right, because they did research the show, and they said, I want to pay to see this person. And then just two other people just fucking showed up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the club, so that's not...
Sure.
You know, but no one... It's a stand-up trope that everyone's talked about forever, but it really is amazing, like, that no one ever goes, like, bye. That no one ever goes, like, I'm going to go look up this thing I'm going to go see. I mean, I go see a lot of music, but I never just, you know, unless it's, like, you know, somewhere like the Heavy Anchor where I'm just hanging out anyways, and I'm like, oh, I'll walk in the road, I'll pay $5, I'll go see that, whatever. You know, but even there, you hear it through the garage door. Right. You know, you can kind of hear, but I would just never go, like, yeah, I'm going to go to Off-Broadway and just, who's playing? I don't care. You know, because it's not, there's very few places that are so segmented to where it's like, well, that's the punk club, and that's the this kind of club, where, you know, like, kind of like, I feel like, you know, when you read stories about the 80s and the 90s and, like, the uprising of, like, what's now considered, like, indie music, but when it was underground or whatever, there were these clubs where it was like, yeah, you can go any night of the week and you'll see a band that's kind of, like, interesting or whatever, but I feel like a lot of, most clubs are still, like, yeah, tonight it's this, and this is a singer-songwriter, and tomorrow they're going to be super loud. And, like, I would never just go, like, I'm going to show up, and then if I don't like the band, I'm going to be mad at the band. Like, how dare you show up on this to this bar I go to sometimes? It's like, what the fuck? Who are you? You're just some dude.
Right. Well, we did say you do have a split 7-inch
yep.
with it has a track from your comedy record and a track from Shark Dead.
Yep.
And that's available for purchase. Is that also on Bandcamp, or is it?
So the song is, I mean, this, well, okay, so yes and no. The comedy album is not on Bandcamp. The comedy album, though, is on Spotify right. and iTunes, whatever. But you can buy this on Bandcamp. It's just you can't hear the comedy piece. It's, yeah. It wasn't uploaded because the comedy track itself, there's a record label involved in that, and I didn't want to get through the whole clearing rights, and it was hard enough for me to read the contract I signed anyways, so I wasn't about to like start adding addendums to it.
Right.
But the song that's on the 7-inch, a different vocal mix, will be on the Almost Pink EP, which comes out on Friday. And that is, you can find that on Bandcamp, but you can buy the 7-inch on Bandcamp. It was a limited run of 500. I think I have 200 left, so, it's not exactly flying out the, but, you know, hopefully by the end of the year, they'll all be good. You know, because it's funny when you do, like, when you get product, because, like I said, like, the comedy album itself is, like, through the label, and they handle all that. Like, I don't really mess, I don't have, like, boxes around my apartment, but the this I released myself, the 7-inch just yeah. itself, so it's like whenever you do that, and I did that with one of my comedy albums, one of the earlier ones, you just have boxes of shit laying around your apartment,
right.
like, and you're just, and it's not to, it comes to a point, it's not even like I want to sell these because I need money, it's like I want to sell these so I can walk in that part of my office again. You know what yeah. I mean? So yeah,
sure. Well, I think it's cool because it comes with the download card with the full record.
Yep.
So if you are interested in buying, you can get the 7-inch and you still get all the digital download, and I think it's really cool with the, you know, especially with vinyl today, not having to worry about buying it twice or having to rip it or do any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you get a copy of it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you know, I'm someone who collects vinyl. That's my vice. You know, I mean, that's the best part about touring is I travel around. I get to go to the store, you know, towns and just walk. One of the day, wherever I am, I just walk around the record store. And I also have this unnecessary policy where I won't leave a record store unless I buy something, like, because it just feels like I should contribute to this part of the economy, whatever. And so I just really wanted to do, to put one of my things out on vinyl, and we talked about doing the full album on vinyl, and it was pretty expensive because it was an undertaking I was going to have to fund myself. It was pretty expensive, and I mean, it's bad enough to have 500 7-inches sitting around my apartment. Like, I can't even imagine what my apartment would look like if I had 500 like 12-inch, you know, LPs sitting around. So, I mean, and this was kind of at the point the band had started writing some stuff. I had started writing some new songs. We had started recording some stuff. And so it was like, oh, this is a way to kind of combine the two, you know,
sure.
things. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think it's a really, really cool idea. And I think it'd be fun even if, you know, other bands, like, you know, just friends, people that are friends and stuff, other bands get something to help cross, you know, different markets.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I think that would be really cool. I mean, especially in St. Louis right now. I think there's a lot of crossover, it feels like, yeah. in the kind of different, you know, with music and comedy, and I think it would be, you know, because the idea of this just came, you know, a lot of bands will do this, they'll release split 7-inches with another band, you know, and so the idea was like, well, I'm doing both these things, but I had that secondary idea of like, I can think about 4 or 5 local comics and 4 or 5 local bands. I think it would, like, if you put them both on a 7-inch, it wouldn't be weird,
yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't want to put, like, you know, like some like real like vulgar, you know, comic with like some like folk artist like
right.
that. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you would. That would be kind of funny, I guess. But I thought about like, oh, that'd be cool if I could do this with, and I would like do it with some other. I wouldn't mind actually trying to put that together. But I need to sell these first
yeah.
for space reasons.
Sure. Well, yeah, get out there and pick up a copy of. Of this split 7-inch, or just the digital version of whatever.
Yeah.
So you don't have, this is the only physical copy of that represents, or do you have CDs or anything?
I do not. I didn't do that because I did the 7-inch.
Right.
I mean, we've got even the EP for the band, we only had 100 CDs pressed up. It's weird. Now, I don't think people really buy CDs.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll buy them, like, as souvenirs.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because I was having this discussion with someone else. It's like, everything now is digital, but you do a show, the chances that someone gets home, remembers your name, yeah. remembers to buy it, is, like, it's... When people don't have something in front of them, I'm not saying, like, you're here, you know, but it's, they, you know, it's at least as they're walking by, they're like, oh, that's the thing. And so the discussion of this was an online thing I was having with some people is, like, do you just do download cards? Like, do you, and I think something feels weird with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just feels, yeah, no, trust me, when you get home, this will work. Yeah. Give me $10 for this piece of plastic when you get home, I promise.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if you attach it to anything, if you attach it to a t-shirt or like I'm a pretty, I did this album cover. I was the one that did this, and Jason and I did this one together, and then I did the Almost Pink album cover. But I'm not good at, like, I guess I can do digital art okay. I can, you know, manipulate stuff, but I can't do, like, I can't paint. I can't draw.
Yeah.
But I think, I know musicians that can. I think even if it's like, hey, here's this, you know, print of, like, some cool painting I did. I mean, you look at how many bands' albums covers, you realize later, like, oh, someone in the band, you know, painted that. That's, you know, that's awesome.
Right.
You know, so I think if you do something like that and you have a download card, it's cool. I just think it's weird. I would even feel weird, you know, if someone's like, no, just buy this little piece of plastic. Swear to God, it'll work when you get home. Okay, people that are leaving town tomorrow that, you know, I wouldn't know how to track. And not that $10 is like, holy shit, I'm out $10. But yeah. In the same sense, it's like, I don't know. So the 7-inch came from that. It was like, well, if I'm not going to do CDs, what am I going to do? And then it was like, okay, well, this will be a physical product.
Yeah. I had Nick Vaderot on the show a while back, and he, you know, Comedy Central put out his record, but they weren't going to do physical forms.
Yeah.
They're all digital. But, you know, same thing, like you know, you're going to shows and you have your table maybe or whatever and you want to sell some copies of it after, but he's like, you know, the same kind of thing, not having just cards. He's like, he made jokes about, like, going to, like, a garage sale and just getting a bunch of, like, random items and, like, you know, here's a, you know, stamp a download code on this old shoe and everything, you know, what if people just want something.
Yeah, that actually, A, is a good idea, and
right.
B, kind of sounds like something Nick would do,
yeah.
So now I'm kind of hoping he does do
yeah.
that, like, because that's pretty funny.
Right.
And weirdly, like, something like that, like, this to me was, like, designed, like, specifically, like, hey, if you also, like, collect vinyl, like, mm-hmm. this might be something, you know, because it's white with, like, it's got little red stiping, and it's, you know, it's not just straight black either on the vinyl, but, like, to me, that'd be kind of funny. Like, even if I was, like, on the fence, even if I was, like, I don't know, I kind of want to buy that dude's album, but I don't know. Like, if he's, like, it's, you also get this shoe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man, I'm totally buying that dude's album. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I mean, I remember, When I was starting, because I always thought, I don't know, merchandise always makes me feel gross. Like, I understand the point of it, and, like, you know, when you do something and it's like, I created this thing and, you know, I'd like to have it out in the world, but the whole merchandising of, like, comedy after shows just always felt gross to me. And I remember I was young and I was, like, doing this open mic, and there were these dudes, like, selling their, like, shitty, like, burned CDs, you know, CDs they burned in their house that they recorded on God knows what. You know, there's no art, it's just, like, their name on a CDR. And they're selling them at an open mic, first of all, and I was like, what? And so this would happen all the time at this open mic. So I went back one week. I had a jewel case from a CD, and I took the insert out, and I did my set, and then I turned around and I go, hey, if you guys are interested after the show, I'm selling Kool-Aid. And I pulled I had a package of Kool-Aid in the jewel case, and I just held it up, and then I did this a couple times, and one of the club door guys actually took the Kool-Aid and made it, and I sat out after the show basically with, like, a children's Kool-Aid stand.
Yeah.
But I think you were at the show too that one Thanksgiving, weren't you, where I sold turkey sandwiches?
I don't remember that one.
This was here in town. Yeah. I was
turkey sandwich.
I usually go home for Thanksgiving, and it was one of those years where I couldn't. I'm from Ohio originally. So I made myself this, like, turkey in a crock pot, and I had way too much. And so I was just, like, sitting around my, you know, my apartment kind of bored. I think I was, like, I watched all three of the X-Men movies back to, but just to waste time on Thanksgiving until the show that night. And I got this dumb idea, and so I just took all the extra turkey, and I made turkey sandwiches. There's a picture on my Facebook of it still, and I put a sign in front of me, and it said CDs $10, turkey sandwiches $1. And I sold, I had 10. I sold every single turkey sandwich. My favorite was this dude was clearly drunk. He was the first one out of the showroom, and he just ran by the table. He threw a dollar at me, grabbed it, because they were in, you know, like Ziploc bags, grabs a sandwich and just walks away. So it's like stuff like that to me, because you do at a point, I don't know. I've never understood t-shirts for comics. Like, I get it for bands. I don't really get it for... The only one I ever thought that did t-shirts cool was Hedberg. Because Hedberg's just said, like, Mitch Hedberg. And I was like, that's fucking rock star, dude. You know what I mean? If you can sell a t-shirt as a comic with just your name on it and people... That's badass. Like, right. That's... You know, and I feel that way with bands. You know, people buy band t-shirts because... It's, you know, they like that band. There's some weird form of identification, but comedy t-shirts are rarely that. You know what I mean? They're always like some goofy ass shit. And I understand why people buy them, even because people buy comedy t-shirts over CDs. And the reason I think this is using my one of the few times in my life I get to use my psychology degree is, you know, when you buy an album, it's like, hey, listen, this guy's funny, right? And people are like, all right, whatever. That doesn't really reflect on you. But if you have a funny t-shirt, then people are like, you're funny. You know what I mean? You get to be the funny. So, I mean, I understand the psychology of it, but I've always, like, taken shots at comedy marketing, like, always in my set. Like, I've, like, sold my phone number after shows. I did the Kool-Aid thing. I did, you know, turkey sandwich. I have a joke on the album where I say after the show I'm selling my parents' HBO Go password. You know, it's just... I don't know. Like, I'm not good. I mean, you know, with the band, it's different. And it's also with the band, it's like, you know, there's four of us. It's like, we're all kind of commit, you know, comedy, you can kind of be your own dick. And, like, it's like, if you want to be a dick, like, you're shooting yourself, you know. But with the band, it's like, you know, there's four of you in it, you know. Right. And everybody has to take their turn selling merch or whatever. And I get it, but I'm still not good at it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, I don't know. Like, I was talking to a friend of mine. I'm really bad at promoting myself. I think it's just the thing of, like, I do something and then I'm kind of like, I don't know, if you like it, cool. Like, I'll do it again. But, like, I don't know, you figure out how to find it. You know what I mean? Like, which is horrible. I was talking to a friend of mine. She's like, you know, if you keep up this attitude, you're eventually going to make, you're going to have no money and you're going to, like, have to go, like, quit. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that either, I guess. She's like, well, fucking promote yourself a little bit. I'm like, I'm not very good at it. Just because, like, especially after a show, like, I'd rather, like, if someone comes up and they're like, I really like that. I'd rather have a conversation with them than, like, try to shove something in their face. Be like, awesome, you like me? Validate it. Yeah. Like, this is how much it costs to like me. That always just felt, like, very, but I'm also horribly insecure, so that probably has a lot to do with it, too.
I feel like all that, people still buy CDs and people still want to buy shirts or whatever, but I feel like we are in the era where people just want the selfie. Like, that's our, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's like, that's as good as buying the CD, is like, if I can just get a picture and say that I was there and stuff, so.
I did a show, it was 3 weeks ago, I guess, and this was after the show, and someone was like, hey, can I take a picture? And I was like, yeah, totally. And, you know, they got in, like, selfie position, and then it was, like, a girl, and I think her boyfriend was like, well, I'll just take it. And I was like, yeah, he'll just take it. She's like, no, it has to be a selfie. I'm like, fucking why? Like, I understand the concept of that, like, if there's no one else around, but, right. Like, just, we'll look more normal if it's from there than, like, you know, the overhead, like, yeah. Let's try to, like, I don't know. So, yeah, but, I mean, that really is it. But, I mean, that in and of itself, when we talked about the t-shirt... That's validation.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, look how... I mean, I don't think anyone gives a fuck who I am, personally. But, like, you know, when I work with famous people, for lack of a better term, that's exactly what that is. It's, I'm going to get this picture so I can put it online. You know, it's to... Because the weird thing about Facebook or Twitter, whatever form of social media you employ as your main artery... people have become really good at self-promoting nothing. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just self-promoting that they exist, which is, to me, very weird. Like, you know, you do this show, and it's like, you'll put on, like, hey, you know, I've got this episode of it, because you want people to listen to the show. You're promoting the show. It's a product. I'll be like, hey, I'm at this club because I'm trying to promote a product. And it's so weird to me how many people, like, you just look at... Facebook or Twitter, and they're just trying to promote the fact that they exist.
Right.
And it's really, like, I don't have a ton of friends. I really don't. I'm really hard to get along with on a personal level. And I understand that. But, like, whatever validation or whatever I need, I get, you know, what I get from that. Or I get from, or maybe I'm just delusional because I get a lot of my validations from strangers and being on stages or whatever. But I don't understand, like, people have turned themselves into commodities for seemingly nothing. You know what I mean? You're not really promoting anything except, I don't know if it's your, like, the fact that you exist, or, like, it's a thing of, like, well, look how many friends I have, or Instagram followers, or this. I don't understand the currency in that. Yeah. Like, it doesn't, like, Instagram's my, I guess, my favorite version of this, because, like, I follow friends of mine, you know what I mean? Because I actually give a shit what's going on in their life,
right.
You know? I believe I follow you, and I follow my sister, and I follow, you know, some club owners I know who, like, I only get to see once a year, and it's, and, you know, because I want to see what's going on with their kids, or their wife, or what did they do on Saturday, or whatever, but, like, it's, you take in... Like, even myself, I sometimes have to think, like, well, I have to somewhat monitor what I'm putting out there, because it's being put out there to strangers, you know what
right.
I mean, who know me from stand-up or the band or whatever, and so you kind of think, like, I mean, there are definitely things that I'm like, yeah, I don't necessarily want everyone to see that picture, you know? I mean, it's been a thing with girlfriends I've had, where they've been like, well, why aren't you putting that out everywhere? And it's like, well, if... Because I don't necessarily want every stranger to know that we went to, you know, fucking wherever for lunch. And, you know, you wore that and I wore... Like, it's like... I don't know. And so I really don't understand... So I really don't understand the side part of that, which is like... I want more strangers to know what I'm doing. I'm
right.
going to keep promoting myself so more... And I'm like, why? Like, why would you want that? You know what I mean? Like, I've had a lot of really... I've been really lucky... In the sense that I've had a lot of people over my career, a lot, that's a ridiculous term, I've had a number of people who will just message me like, hey, I saw your show last night, that was really good, and I'll message back with them, and you start getting in a conversation, and then you go like, oh, that's my friend now, you know what I mean? And now, yeah, I do want to follow you on Instagram or whatever, because I consider you the same part of like my friendship, you know, so I have people... around the country who I go into towns to see concerts sometimes and just fly in, and it's like these people that I were at one of my shows and I had a conversation with, and I'm like, oh yeah, cool, like we have similar interests, we should
yeah.
be friends, that's awesome. But like, just the idea of yourself as a commodity is so strange to
right.
me. Like, I have a niece and she's great, but I see it with her, like she wants like she's on whatever that app is, like where you sing karaoke. Do you know what? I don't know what it is. I forget what it is, but she does that a lot. And she's like, Uncle Jeremy, I want you to share this so more people watch me. And I'm like, no, like absolutely not. Like, because I don't, one, you're 10. I don't want a bunch of people like, just, I don't, to me, there's something creepy about that to begin with. But two, I don't, and it's just being of, okay, if you consider that I was at the very crest end of what was called Generation X, and then they called it Generation Y, but now that's been rolled into Millennials, so whatever generation they're going to call my niece is part of, right? They were born in that thought of, like, well, I need as many people as possible to know what I'm doing. Like, that's just normal to them, whereas to me, that's completely insane. It's like, what? When it comes to my personal life, I would prefer less people to know what I'm doing, you know what
right.
I mean? Like...
Sure.
I don't know. It's just very strange.
Yeah. You were saying a while ago that every time you every town you go to, you try to support a record store and try to pick up something new. What's some of the latest that you picked up?
What am I really loving? So I actually did have to order this one in because I missed it. There's a band called Filthy Friends. They released a 7-inch for Record Store Day. It's Corinne Tucker from Slater Kinney, Peter Buck from REM. And some of the guys from, like, the Young Fresh Fellows, they just put out the 7-inch, but it's really awesome. So there's a 7-inch, then they did one other song that you can find on Spotify, but it just sounds like, it really sounds like old REM if it was fronted by Slater Kinney. Like, which is, to me, like, some people are probably like, that sounds terrible. But, like, to me, I'm like, that sounds awesome. So I've really been in love with that. They reissued all the Helium albums, which is Mary Timony, who's in a band called X-Hex now. But this was all her stuff from the 90s. And I kind of missed it in the 90s, to be honest. And a friend of mine turned me onto them a few years ago. But they just, Matador just reissued all the, and then they put out a compilation. That's really great. That's what I was actually listening to on the way in here. I saw Margaret Glaspie last week at the Duck Room. She's awesome. And then there's a band from Australia called Middle Kids that I've like been in love with since I heard their EP. So yeah. I'm sure when I listen to this, because I am so self-involved, I will listen to myself just to see what mistakes I made. There'll be like five bands. I'm like, oh, why didn't you talk about so and so? You know what I mean? But those are like the five that like I really just like popped into my head, like that I've just been listening to a lot of lately.
Yeah, it's cool how like something like that from, you know, maybe you say in the 90s, like how you can you might have missed it, but then you like listen to it today and it's still like just as good or current, or you know, it's like it's just I don't know, it's always a fun thing to go rediscover something that you missed completely. And
oh totally that there's this song that I don't know how I missed it either, but I did. It was, and it was just Merge Records, when you order something from them, they always send you like a compilation CD of like their newest releases. They do it by season, I think. And so that was, I was just listening to that, and there's a song called I think it's 100,000 Fireflies. It's by the Magnetic Fields, and I've never heard it, and it's on a reissue they did. Oh my god, that's such a good song. Like it's such, and it's, that's what I love kind of about music, is it's dual-ended in the sense that like people are always putting out new stuff that is just outstanding, and you've never heard it, but then you also go like, I don't care how into, because I've always been pretty into music. I mean, I was that kid at 16 who just hung out at a record store every day until the guys were finally like, oh, fuck it, yeah, like, buy this, don't buy that, listen to this, you know? But there's still stuff that you just missed, you know what I mean? And all these years later, you just missed, and then, like, you find it, and you're like, oh, this is incredible, you know? The only other one I would say, and then I'm going to move off this because you can't get me started talking about music because this will be a five-hour podcast. There's a girl called Phoebe Bridgers who I saw open for Ryan Adams when he started this tour. I flew down to Richmond, Virginia to see the first two nights, and she was outstanding. It's just real kind of dark singer-songwritery stuff, but she's really, really great, so I would look for her as well.
Nice. So you can pick up the brand new Shark Dad EP this weekend, June 3rd.
Yep.
At the Heavy Anchor.
Yep.
With you can see Shark Dad with O Caledonia and Super Slag. And if you make it to the show, it'll be all over your digital platforms.
Yep.
Your Shark Dad Bandcamp.
We are sharkdad.bandcamp.com.
Yeah. Pick up Jeremy's record, Whatever, and you can listen to that through Spotify or iTunes or anything like that. And again, pick up the Split 7-inch. You can also catch Shark Dad in St. Louis, part of the RFT Showcase, Riverfront Times Showcase, playing on June 17th, 4 p.m. at the Gramophone.
Yep.
And that's like a full day, like 36 hours of
music. Oh, yeah,
music.
That's going to be a great, yeah. I mean, the Gramophone itself starts at 2. My friend Bob's band, Other People, plays at 2, and then I think there's a DJ, and then there's us. And the just day goes on. Like, there's so many great bands. Like, I went last year kind of as a writer because I wasn't in a band and hadn't been in a long time. And I went because it was somebody who wrote for the RFT. And it was just such a great time. And it's, like, weird to, like, just be a year later and be like, oh, cool, I get to play on it. And then I just get to walk around and see all these other cool bands all day. Like, that's real. Like, I'm super, super amped about that.
Yeah, like, I don't know, what, like 100 or something bands? Or
It's 77.
Yeah, so you got all kinds of, and then it's, like, everything, too. Like, everything's, you know, whatever you're into, there's...
Yeah, you'll find it.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of variety. And then along with a couple upcoming comedy dates, you can see Jeremy in the Baltimore area on June 9th at Ram's Head and July 6th to 8th at Comics.
Comics at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut.
Yeah, and more dates on your...
JeremyEssig.com.
There you go. Follow along on Facebook and Twitter.
All of it's just my name, just all of it, just slash Jeremy Essig, except J Jeremy Essek is the name I took for my personal page. So Jeremy Essek Comedy is technically the Facebook one, but either one, I don't care.
But yeah, man, I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Shane. It was good to see you, buddy.
And I will. I'm gonna try to come on Saturday and hang out and watch some Shark Dad tunes.
Cool, buddy.
Yeah, man. I'll see you then.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.